The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Happy post-Christmas Sunday. If we ever use this as an archive, sorry guys, it's the 27th of December in real life.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that.
I know, I try to make them kind of generic. How can you be generic on Sunday after Christmas?
Yeah, really.
So let's see, I'm Aaron Ryan.
Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And, you know, if one of us is missing, it's like We the People with a limp. But if we're all here together, then things go off without a hitch. We're actually on time. Our guest is on the phone. We're not actually starting the new year off right because that's next week. but I've sort of hedged our bets for next week, actually. We have a guest coming in the studio. So we won't have any of those phone fun things going on next week. So we have Pastor Guy Asherman next week. And I believe we have Shelley Gibbs coming in from CareNet Pregnancy Center.
So oh, wonderful.
So we're going to talk about, you know, abortion and pregnancy centers and Christianity and all that good stuff to start off the new year. Seemed like a good plan. We did it last year. I think we do it every year. Just, I don't know, we think of him at the beginning of the year.
We had Guy on a year ago, that's right.
Yeah, we always kind of do that at the beginning of the year. Kind of nice. So, we were supposed to be gone today, but I was reading an article about wolves. You know, that topic that just gets us all angry and everything. We haven't done any updates on wolves lately, and I read this terrific article by Rena Weatherelt. It was in Sky Country Journal. Somebody forwarded it to me on email, and it was, I think, the 23rd, was last, whatever that is, Wednesday. And I thought, gee, our plans got canceled for travel after Christmas. I wonder if she's around and could do an interview with us at the last minute. God love her. She does email on Christmas. It's my favorite part. It was fantastic. That was my Christmas present. Woo! We have a show.
Yeah. We get to talk about something that
makes us all mad. That
makes us all angry.
Yeah, makes us all angry.
Yeah.
I know. We were going to try to do something, you know, cheerful and peaceful and all. Yeah, well, forget that. So, and this is a slightly different take than what we've done before because we always talk about, like, the diseases that wolves bring and all that sort of thing. And our friends I know in Philadelphia that'll be hearing this on Monday are thinking, who cares about wolves? Because I'm thinking they haven't released them in Philadelphia or New Jersey yet. However, Rena has done a fabulous job of, I really like her tagline on the article. I'll just read that and you'll get the gist. How a public-private partnership skirted the law and destroyed a national treasure and what we must do to restore the rule of law and the Northern Yellowstone elk herd. So when you get into the public-private partnership and all that, that involves your tax dollars.
But it's not just about the elk.
They're coming for your wallet.
The elk is a small portion of what we've destroyed back there.
True.
And it really does affect everybody.
Well, I mean, if you like what goes on in this country, if you ever intend to take your kids or anybody to Yellowstone or Yosemite or any of these national parks that you think are waiting for you out here,
yeah.
Good luck.
Well, you know, if you like paying, you know, $10 a pound for beef, you know.
Oh, and then there's that.
The
cost of beef.
Yeah.
So there are all sorts of things I like to have kind of started out just so you don't to tune us out. We'll get to more politics and stuff later in the year, but we thought we ought to do some natural resource stuff since these things are all they're not all from this administration, obviously. Everybody likes to, you know, say the last 7 years has changed everything. It's been a long time coming.
It has.
The Endangered Species Act back in the 70s. So this has been a little freight train coming for a long time. However, it has picked up a lot of speed. And whoever we elect next year better help us roll this back or good luck to us.
Yeah. Well, it's already, you know, we've already got these magical wolves that have appeared in our territory now. So
yeah, they just show up out of nowhere.
They did. They
fantastic.
Just came down from the mountain.
They haven't been here since, what, 1920? And then poof, they're in Northern California.
Are. First there was one, now there's like, well, we have two packs now that are starting in our area. And there will be more.
And we have no water, but they came here anyway, which was terrific. They must have brought like water bottles and stuff. So anyway, we're going to be irreverent and snarky, but factual today. So There's your big preface. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. I have a ton of information on there. Not only the article we're discussing, but a lot of Rena's videos are on there. And I've got a couple other things to add that I kind of forgot to add yesterday. But so keep refreshing your page. There you go. That's all my commercial announcement. So, got Rena on there. She was raised
has been here the entire time, yes.
Nice. Okay, so she knows what I said. She was raised on a cattle and a sheep ranch in remote southeastern Montana. She grew up in a culture revolving around animal husbandry. Leaving the ranch after high school, she spent a career in local media as a sales consultant and copywriter for radio, television, and newspaper. In 2010, she began filming and editing half-hour stories from the rural Northwest, airing them as Sky Country Journal on cable throughout Montana and Jackson, Wyoming. Rena currently resides in the Bitterroot Valley of Montana and writes occasionally and produces video stories. So you can find her at skycountryjournal.com, and I've got that all linked up for you on the website. So, hi, Rena.
This just
hi,
in.
How's it going? Oh, Bob's got an update for us.
You may or may not have heard this, but Fish and Wildlife just reported the first livestock kill by wolves in Siskiyou County.
Oh, imagine that.
How timely is that?
Wolves killed livestock already, but you know what? They told me in all those meetings it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, but actually that happened quite some time ago, and they never admitted that it was wolves. And I'm glad to hear now that they're finally coming to the party.
Did Fish and Wildlife actually say that they agreed it was a wolf kill?
That's what I was told.
Nice.
I'll see if I can find some additional information.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, I guess that's better than we would have anticipated.
The games have begun already here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Rena, you're in an area where a wolf kill is like, yeah. Call me when you have more than one. Where would you like to start with us today?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Aaron. I appreciate it. And hello to your listeners. I'm in the southeastern or southwestern corner of the state of Montana, and we are kind of ground zero for what was an illegal introduction of a non-native species of wolf 20 years ago, a big 20-year anniversary this year.
Oh, wow.
So we look back and survey the damage.
Yeah, it's been extensive.
Well, your article was a clue. I don't remember if somebody in Siskiyou County forwarded it to me. I think it was Dawn, and your title is, "Do You Realize Now What You Have Done?" I'm going to say, no, they haven't figured it out yet, but we have. Like, the citizens in your area have figured it out, haven't they?
You know, in fact, the question is obviously just rhetorical, but it was their intent all along to move cattle out of the national forest, repeal or revise the Taylor Grazing Act. Make life difficult for ranchers, and then there's conservation easements and all kinds of opportunities for them to take control of private land and get it out of private hands. And they really have no love for ranchers. This goes all the way back to how much grain these cattle consume, and if we would just reduce our beef consumption, we could feed millions more people. And, so ranchers and their flatulent cattle have really been demonized. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of part of their whole modus operandi. And kind of why I got involved in the first place is that, they have to smear the local people and the ranchers and hunters and so on and make them out to be ignorant, superstitious, uneducated, dumb, in order to, I guess, pull off the trauma that they're inflicting on them without remorse.
Yeah, because, just to clarify for people who don't follow this issue at all, and I kind of assume that it's the bulk of people who don't follow, so I want to make sure that we don't just speak about things like everybody already knows the whole thing, but when you say to make the ranchers out to be superstitious and just a bunch of knuckle-dragging country people, a big part of that comes from things like wolves don't attack cattle, that they won't attack dogs, that they won't go near your property, that they won't attack people, that you'll never see them, they'll be out in the wild, and all this fear about them impacting humans and domesticated animals, dogs, cats, that kind of thing, and also livestock is just a myth. Because that's what they say.
It's propaganda, definitely. Most of the wolf biologists that even, there's kind of a cult. I call them the dogs are people too type.
Yep.
But, they have their heroes, and so much of what was written back in the day, it's just been totally debunked. So, wolves are not the fragile little creatures that, if you take out the alpha male, then they might not reproduce, and all the drama surrounding the fragility of these wolves, when in fact, if they have a good food supply, they're just, they breed like pigs. They're just voracious breeders.
Sure, and they'll take whatever's close by. Well, how about this? Here's an article that just was funny. It was right after I had written to you thinking, I definitely want to do this weekend. Here's this article, what to do if you're attacked by a pack of wolves. Okay? I mean, there's really only one answer, pray for death, I guess. This is the article. You're out for a jog in the woods. Suddenly you find yourself surrounded by a pack of wolves. There must be 8 of them. Panic sets in. What should you do? Here we go. I'll skip to the key points of what you should do. First, don't run. This will make you look like prey, which is a bad thing. Remember, wolves are hunters, just in case you didn't know that already. Number 2, don't stare the animal down. This looks like a threat. So remember, you're surrounded by a pack of 8 wolves. Don't turn your back on the wolves. Not sure exactly physiologically how you make that happen.
You're surrounded,
so that was kind of a stupid one just on the face of it. I like this one a lot, though. Make yourself appear scary. You are looking at 8 wolves, and you are going to appear scary, not scared, scary.
So you show your teeth?
No, you're supposed to shout, throw stones in case you want to bend over with the wolves that you're back there. Raise your arms over your head. I'm not sure how you're supposed to throw the stones with your arms over your head, but you run around with your arms over your head and you shout. I like this one, too. If you've entered an enclosure, back away slowly, moving toward the exit with your back against the fence. entered an enclosure, like you're out for a walk, and then you're surrounded by 8 wolves, and you go, holy crap.
I just entered a cage with eight wolves in it.
An enclosure. Okay, this is my favorite one. This is the one that the movies use all the time, and they do it the wrong way. Don't look scared or fall down. This will encourage an attack. See, the first thing, I'm going to be is scared, and I'm definitely falling down. And if things, here's the capper, like if you just have exhausted all your efforts, you can't get out of the enclosure, your scariness isn't working, and if it really gets bad, in case being surrounded wasn't bad enough, curl into a ball and protect your face.
Because they won't bite you if you can't see their face.
If you can't see them, they won't bite you. It's like, are you kidding me? This is the kind of advice people are getting. So, but honestly, on the face of it, if you just read that, you would think, oh, okay, all right, so I'm hiking in a national forest and I get surrounded by wolves. I can just look scary and throw stones and raise my arms and they're going to run away.
And if they don't, I'll just curl up in a ball and hide my face and then they won't bite me. Exactly. They'll go away.
Yeah, imagine, imagine the surprise.
There was a horrific story out of Alaska just, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And a young school teacher from Pennsylvania went out after school with her little headphones on, I think, for a jog.
Oh.
And she was attacked and killed by wolves. And, of course, it was snowy, so they could see the whole scene where she'd been drugged and where she tried to get up and get away. And So I don't know if she ended up covering her face with her hands or not.
Bottom line is it didn't matter and it won't matter. And if you think it will, well, I guess Darwin, you know, had the right idea.
Yeah, they just as well have told you to fold your hands and pray.
Exactly. Well, you know, when people think that that's how you could defend yourself, and then you're constantly told that, because I went to all these stupid hearings and whatnot, and there were a lot. There was a lady in the audience, and I've said this before, wish I had the lady's name. She got up to the microphone. She was on C-SPAN. It was a public hearing in front of the California Fish and Game Commission. And she was just weeping. She just wanted them to list the wolves and as an endangered species. They just had to. And after she kind of got done with that, she said her reason was so that her three-year-old would have the opportunity to meet one in their backyard.
Hmm.
That's the mindset.
Special.
Like this is going to be like a good thing? Or
they have some emotional connection to the predator.
We can do pop psychiatry here. We're good.
Amateur psychology.
Yeah, we're good with it.
Well, also, we're not talking about the wolves that were there originally. They have brought in these Canadian gray wolves, and those are much larger, aren't they?
Well, that was, you know, when I say that this public-private partnership skirted the law, the first thing that they did was ignored the fact that there has always been a wolf here.
Right.
It was called the Canis lupus irremotus. It was a Rocky Mountain timber wolf. And you know, they did clear this area of wolves after they wiped out the buffalo and settlers came. But they didn't get them all, and they lived here, and people, you know, loved and enjoyed the native wolves. They studied them and watched them. And
how did that population stay in check? I mean, did they hunt those, or did they just, there were a small enough number where they didn't overpopulate?
Well, you know, who knows? Some of them could have been released over the years. But the fact is, wolves are very, very mobile. They travel, you know, huge miles. And I think they just live here, you know. They just, there was a small population of the Irremotus, which is a much smaller wolf, and which is not as pack-oriented, and that's, you know, part of the problem that we have with wolves above, like, a cougar or mountain lion is that they run in packs, and so there might be 12, or there might be 25 of them. And the Irremotus was not as pack-oriented. They may have run in pairs. So they didn't cause a lot of problems, and if they did come out on private property, you know, people shot them.
And were the elk a prey animal for that wolf?
I think probably so, but probably more deer. And, you know, I don't know that they took on the moose and the elk as much because it takes a pack, you know, to bring down those bigger animals.
Right, right.
All right, we're coming back. Coming back with Rena in just like 2 minutes. Need to thank our advertisers here for letting us expose this fraud and have a little fun while we're doing it. I'm sure Bob's got some good music for us today. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I'll be right back.
Soul, then it's just your body, then
Well, we're back. We're talking about wolves. We're talking about what's happened in Yellowstone and the introduction of the gray wolf, the Canadian gray wolf, which has pretty much taken over Yellowstone. In your article, Rena, you talk about, you kind of get into the background a little bit and how 20 years ago these wolves were introduced. And at that time, the elk population was around 19,000. The herd was one of the largest, if not the largest, elk herd in the country. And 20 years later, that herd's been reduced to around 4,000 animals. You know, not to mention the other animals that have been driven almost to extinction because of the wolves. How far down can that elk herd go before it's going to be too late?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. There are a lot of elk still in Yellowstone. That is just one of several herds. And, you know, if you take the predators off of them, shoot them with a gun and kill them dead, then that night those elk are safe. So you can turn them around in a season or two if you get the predators off of them. But you know, one of the propaganda pieces that they put out there is that wolves won't destroy their own prey base. But wolves don't have the power of reason, and they will absolutely destroy their own prey base, and then they move on over the next ridge.
Right, right. So they're attacking the elk herds. What else are they decimating? We have moose. What else?
Well, you know, when I back in the 90s, or in, up into the early 2000s, I spent all my spare time out in the woods. I just loved being out there, winter, summer, spring, or fall. And we would run across herds of little grouse of different, different kinds of grouse. And moose up every ravine. The mountains around here were full of mule deer. Now you go out there, and all those animals are gone.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And what is that? What's that done to the the folks that kind of depended on that? Population base to survive. Yeah, what's going on with the economy back there?
It has absolutely destroyed the hunting economy. Of course, right on top of it, they closed down the forest during the Clinton administration, and so Montana is now one of the poorest states in the nation. We did have a it wasn't just an economy, it was a culture.
Right.
The horses and mules that were part of it, it was a way of life. And a lot of that has been destroyed. It's not, there's still game and there's still a few outfitters, but many of them went out of business. And certainly now that they closed Deckard Flats, and are severely limiting the hunting in the district just north of Yellowstone National Park, what's left of a 100-year-old culture is just going to wither and die completely.
Right. And it's not just the outfitters. I mean, you had folks that ran hotels, restaurants, all that business has dried up, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It certainly has. And, Montana has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation. It has been a terrible blow.
See, and for all the people that think that, hunting was bad anyway, so we didn't want people doing it. And you have a lot of those folks that are animal rights activists, so they didn't want you killing animals anyway. But I like in your article in the background segment, the northern Yellowstone elk herd numbered over 19,000 in 1995, and now it's down to 4,000. So what about those animal rights? I mean, those guys, they're not being killed by hunting. After 100 years of hunting, they still had 19,000 of them in 95. You put the wolves in there, and you had 300, here we go. District was a general tag area, home to moose, around 300 bighorn sheep, abundant mule deer and antelope. People came from around the state to fill their freezer with wholesome, nutritious wild meat. And all over the country, for that matter, a lot of people took time off and went out during hunting season. So even though it was constantly hunted, you guys maintained your numbers, and now you add wolves, you're down to 4,000, I think your thing said.
And it's not just the Northern Yellowstone elk herd or, you know, the moose that have really been hit hard. The Lolo herd in central Idaho, and then, of course, the Bitterroot Valley here where I live is just across the border from that. And the only elk really to speak of are down now in the valleys on the ranches, which is causing, you know, a whole new set of problems for ranchers because they tear out fences and
sure.
eat their hay. And but, you know, I wanted to go back to the public-private partnership and kind of finish how they skirted the law there.
Yeah, and that's a biggie because I don't think people realize what the cost is. I don't think they realize they're paying for it. I think it's easy to look at this as an issue that doesn't affect them. I don't hunt. I don't live in Montana. I think wolves are pretty, and so this is all working out great.
Well, they've spent jillions of dollars on wolves. In taxpayer money in the last 20 years. So, you know, they constantly are flying and collaring and tracking and, you know, just spending enormous amounts of money coddling these wolves when they're absolutely over the target goal by hundreds in all of these states. But there is such pressure from the, you know, the social clique that revolves around wolves that, you know, they're still very cautious in any efforts to take out wolves that are causing problems.
Yeah, and why do you think that is? Why do they how do they maintain this power base?
Let's take the organization called Defenders of Wildlife.
Yes.
That organization is a not-for-profit corporation. They have tax-exempt status. And you know, one of the ways that they earn money is by using, you know, pictures of wolf pups, save the pups from ranchers. And
they're always little, too. They're like little fuzzy puppy-looking things.
It's like a little forest dog. And they just want to have fun out there in the forest, and the ranchers are just telling them. And so anyway, they get donations from people, you know, just by hitting the heartstrings. But their other income stream comes from filing lawsuits against the Department of the Interior on any action that is taken by any federal agency that might possibly involve an endangered species. So, you know, what we kind of figured out here after, you know, they kept suing every time the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would delist the wolf, take it off the list, they would sue and make them put it back on. And it turns out that these environmental organizations, like Defenders of Wildlife, are paid damages from the U.S. Treasury every time they win one of these lawsuits. And they are also reimbursed for their attorney's fees, which are exorbitant. But literally, these groups have taken billions. According to Karen Bud Fallon, who you're probably familiar with, they have literally are just sucking billions of dollars out of the U.S. Treasury, not just over wolves, but any any federal action that might affect, say, a grizzly bear or a lynx or a, you know, any endangered species. And so it's quite a cottage industry. And that's why if you say, well, it makes no sense, but yes, it makes great sense because
it's lucrative.
They're living.
Yeah, it's really lucrative. We have to take another quick break. We got a little behind on our break. Somehow we have to fit two more in right at the top of the hour. but you're going to hang with us for the whole time, so we'll be fine. You can find all the information we're chatting about and some extra stuff as I'm adding it as we speak on WeThePeopleRadio.us. We will be back with Rena Witherall talking about wolves. Just in case the music wasn't a clue.
In his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
We're back, talking about wolves.
Rena, I'm reading your article. I'm trying to stay sane and not blow my mind. You were talking about how they've skirted the law and this whole Endangered Species Act. In part of the article here, you talk about experimental populations and how one section of the Endangered Species Act allows them to introduce an experimental population as long as it doesn't interfere with geographically with non-experimental populations of the same species. How'd they get away with that? Because didn't they just dump them right on top of the timber wolves?
Yes, they did. And, you know, they got away with it the same way that they got away with you know, taking $60 million out of the Pittman-Robertson Fund illegally. They just did it.
And for folks who don't know what that is, can you...
The Pittman-Robertson Fund is a federal fund that was passed, I think, back in the 30s, and it collects taxes from firearms, ammunition, and other sporting equipment, and it puts it into this fund, and then by law, all except about 5% of that money for administrative purposes has to go back to state fish and wildlife agencies. But during the Clinton administration, zealots who desperately wanted to bring in an experimental species, they just took about $60 million out of that money. And when they were found out by congressional investigation, the head of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, her name was Jamie Rappaport Clark, told Congress that Bruce Babbitt, her boss, had told her she could spend the money any way she wanted.
Oh, that's nice.
That hardly ever happens.
They all got big bonuses, and they built a new office in San Francisco, and then they used money to go up to Canada and bring in the largest wolf in North America.
And the gray wolf, the Canadian gray wolf, I mean, that's like over a 100-pound wolf compared to the timber wolf, which is more like a coyote. Isn't that right?
That's right. I mean, they were bigger than a coyote. They were a medium-sized wolf, 70 to maybe 120 pounds. But the wolves that they brought in are enormous. They're a size bigger, and subsequent DNA studies show that those wolves have Eurasian genetics. And I don't know if any of your listeners remember, but you can actually see Russia from Alaska.
That would explain the Eurasian genetics.
From somebody's porch.
Exactly. So the Eremotus, the way I understand it, after the ice started to recede, after the ice age, wolves came up from the south, from Mexico and South America. And so those wolves were, you know, had much longer genetic footprint in North America. But the wolves that they brought in were wolves that came across the ice bridge in waves over the years. And so they not only have a Eurasian genetics, they had Eurasian diseases. And, you know, one of the most horrifying things that has happened with this wolf introduction has been the introduction of deadly parasites that affect humans, and they affect the prey base. So the moose now that are remaining have a disease spread by these wolves, and so do the elk, and people in Idaho have already been infected, and it's kind of like cancer. The little parasites grow in cysts all over your body and your lungs and liver and brain, and they have to be removed like removing a cancerous tumor, and if they rupture, you go into toxic shock and die.
Mm, that's lovely. And this is something that was not here before, that the local animal populations didn't have, and now now it's spreading out through all the different species in that area because of the wolves.
That's right. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, I talked about how I love being out in the mountains here. I would take, you know, mom and the kids, and we go out huckleberry picking, and, you know, I always would carry a sidearm, but as long as we weren't in grizz country, there was no big, you know, big threat out there. But now, can you imagine taking your mom and your little kids out, and suddenly you're surrounded by a half a dozen, 100-plus-pound wolves?
Yeah, because they're not there just, you know, hanging out and going to watch you. They're going to eat you because they don't have any fear of humans, do they?
They are they're developing fear, but absolutely they have no fear of anything unless they've been shot at. They do get very smart very fast.
Hmm. Yeah, because I'm gonna add, that's the one thing I forgot to do today. I'm gonna add that article, the one from the Real Wolf book about the let's see, here we go, my favorite, page 75. Wolves kill bridal party. So for all those people that are still living in La La Land and think wolves don't attack people, this is an article from the New York Times published March 19th, 1911. Only two escape out of 120 in Asiatic Russia. They were tragic details of the fate of a wedding party attacked by wolves in Asiatic Russia while driving on sleds to the bride's house. So where the banquet was supposed to have taken place. There's a whole article. Big long strip article, and I'll add that on the website for those of you who think that, you know, the wolves will just run away, and as long as you cover your face, you're all good.
Yeah, and yeah, there were firearms around in those days too. And
well,
and
yeah, I'm sure 100 and, what, two escaped out of 120. I'm sure 118 people didn't just stand there and wave their arms around.
No, I mean, I'm sure at that time, not everybody, but a lot of people carried firearms when they were out in the woods.
Where did all those stories come from? All the Little Red Riding Hood and all those stories, they were there to scare children and, you know, make them aware, because they had lots of wolves, have lots of wolves in Europe and always have. It's not worked out very well. Bob, do you have a break? Is that what you're flagging us for? Very good. Last break before the top of the hour. We're here with Rena Witherell. We are discussing her fabulous article you can find online at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Yeah, I want to get back into those diseases, too. We're not done talking about that.
All right, we're coming back with diseases and Bill.
Couple of burnt out roosters on the line. Look out below, because here we go. Well, we commenced trucking, and then hens commenced the clucking.
Nice, Bob.
Earl took out a match.
Okay, Bill, hit the disease.
The disease.
The disease.
Yeah. So these wolves have been introduced into Yellowstone, pretty much taken over. Can't hunt them. I think they only issue a couple of hunting permits a year now. And
I think how many wolf permits do they do? Is it three, or was that the elk permits, Rena?
It's three in that particular hunting district. Montana has many hunting districts, and most of them don't have quotas. So that's been, you know, a long, hard battle to fight. But in the area just north of Yellowstone, they only allow three wolves to be harvested. And the reason for that is because the wolf watchers name these wolves, and they tag them, and they write stories about them and pictures.
God.
And then it's just, you know, if one of them ends up dead, it's, you know, a big
tragedy. Yeah. So this disease that you were talking about is a parasite. And now, if you don't come in contact with a wolf, how do you get this disease?
Well, it's spread through the scat. So the wolves are just carriers of it. It doesn't harm them, but they spread it through their scat. And then these eggs are very resilient, and they just scatter all over the foliage. So even if you're picking huckleberries and eating them, you are exposing yourself to it. Certainly, if you're walking and you get these on your boots, and then you walk in the house, you're bringing it in,
right?
And your pets are exposed.
Well, that's a biggie right there. Your dogs and cats are out there, and they're in and out of your house. They're going to be carriers as well.
And it isn't just the animals who get it; it's people too.
Right.
It's people, and Jim Beer is the wildlife law enforcement officer that uncovered the theft of the Pittman Robertson money. He says people in Russia and Asia do not let dogs in their house, and the reason for that is because some of these deadly parasites that are more prevalent over there and that they have now introduced here. And it's not just this particular these wolves are 100% infested with Echinococcus granulosis, but they're also vectors of other diseases, including terrible things like the plague and smallpox. You know, the wolves were blamed by early biologists for the spread of smallpox through the Midwestern Indian villages back in the day. But they spread things like anthrax and brucellosis, and they also spread, I won't be able to say the name of the disease, but it gets into dairy cattle and causes the dairy cattle to abort. So as these wolves move into Washington and Oregon and California and into our, you know, our dairy and our bread baskets, they're spreading really deadly diseases into what was once a very healthy, pristine ecosystem.
And, right, they, and right. these are and the people that advocate this, the part that just gets me, the folks that are advocating this are all spending, you know, 10 times more than the rest of us for, I don't know, lettuce at Whole Foods because they've got to have everything organic. And yet they're in love with a predator that carries an incredibly deadly disease.
Right. And the problem with the wolves is people will say, well, you know, ground squirrels, you know, carry the plague and, you know, rats. And but they don't migrate like the wolves do with, you know, with the other migrating herds. I mean, that I would imagine that wolves would spread it out over the, you know, a bigger geographic area than pretty much any other animal, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Wolves cover large areas, and, you know, they do it all the time. So they're constantly moving from, you know, your domestic sheep down in the valley to your bighorn sheep up in the mountains.
Right.
And spreading, you know, really an ecological disaster is what they are.
Exactly. Hey, we're gonna break at the top of the hour here. We're going to come back.
When we come back, we're going to play our favorite video about wolves, how wolves change rivers.
Well, it's audio from the video.
Audio from the video. You're going to love it. We'll be right back. Back to Hour 2 of We the People Radio. You're joining Aaron, Bill, and Bob for another hour of frustration and fun all rolled into one. We're here with our guest, Raina Weatherall. She has written a terrific article on wolves. And for those of you just joining us, you should go to the archives at wethepeopleradio.us. And you'll be able to hear the first half of the show. We'll have it up commercial-free later this afternoon. But the gist of it is that you're paying a lot of money, regardless of whether or not you live in the country, or you ever intend to visit Yellowstone, or you know could care less about hunting. Maybe you don't even eat meat. You do care about this because it's costing you, and it's a travesty. I mean, there just is a whole bunch of stuff going on that is kind of unseen, but it isn't unfelt, and a lot of it is going to be very, very difficult to fix. So we thought we'd start the second half with some propaganda.
Well, actually, it's the other side of the story. Let's be fair. This is actually what you need to believe.
That's true. Well, you know, like, this has had like 2 million views. People actually think this might be true.
Well, it is true, because the guy telling the story has an English accent, and we all know that makes it much more sophisticated, and obviously he's done his homework because he's English, and it's much more believable.
All right, we have to put the audio on here for you.
Yeah, because I'm already getting mad.
Go ahead, Bob. And we're going to get Rena's take on this when we're done, by the way. It's a moment of silence while we all collect ourselves, I guess.
Oh, wait.
Oh, the sound.
Oh, here
darn
we go.
Sound.
All right, here we go.
All right, I think I got it on the right channel now.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, that's the right channel.
Hey, that sounds just like my dog.
Yeah.
At dinner time. It is dinner time. That's what I want to hear when I go camping.
One of the most exciting scientific findings of the past half century has been the discovery of widespread trophic cascades. A trophic cascade is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And the classic example is what happened in the Yellowstone National Park in the United States when wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Now, we all know that wolves kill various species of animals, but perhaps we're slightly less aware that they give life to many others.
Like parasites.
Before the wolves turned up, they'd been absent for 70 years. But the numbers of deer, because there was nothing to hunt them, had built up and built up in the Yellowstone Park. And despite efforts by humans to control them, they'd managed to reduce much of the vegetation there to almost nothing. They'd just grazed it away.
That Yellowstone was just
But as soon as the wolves arrived, even though they were few in number,
starving today.
They started to have the most remarkable effects.
Here we go.
First, of course, they killed some of the deer, but that wasn't the major
thing. Not very many, though. Hardly
much
any.
More significantly, they radically changed the behavior of the deer. The deer started avoiding certain parts
run,
of the park.
Forest, run, forest, run.
This is where they could be trapped most easily, particularly the valleys and the gorges. And immediately, those places started to regenerate. In some areas, the height of the trees quintupled in just 6 years.
Quintupled.
Bare valley sides quickly became forests of aspen and willow and cottonwood.
Oh, yes.
And as soon as that happened, the birds started moving.
Oh, no.
Shout out to
cottonwood.
Say it isn't so, the birds
started to increase greatly.
Oh,
the number of beavers started to increase because beavers like to eat the trees. And beavers, like wolves, are ecosystem engineers. They create niches for other species.
Niches.
And the dams they built in the rivers provided habitats for otters and muskrats and ducks and fish and reptiles and amphibians.
My God.
The wolves killed coyotes. And as a result of that, the number of rabbits and mice began to rise, which meant more hawks, more weasels, more foxes, more badgers. Ravens and bald eagles came down to feed on the carrion that the wolves had left. Bears fed on it too, and their population began to rise as well, partly also because there were more berries growing on the regenerating shrubs.
Well,
and the
bears
reinforced the impact of the wolves by killing some of the calves of the deer.
But not very many.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, wait, it's really interesting.
The wolves changed the behavior of the rivers.
Magic.
They began to meander less. There was less erosion. The channels narrowed. More pools formed. More riffle sections, all of which were great for wildlife habitats. The
Except
rivers
they were all dead.
Changed in response to the wolves. And the reason was that the regenerating forests stabilized the banks so that they collapsed less often, so that the rivers became more fixed in their course. Similarly, by driving the deer out of some places and the vegetation recovering on the valley sides, there was a soil erosion because the vegetation stabilized that as well. So the wolves, small in number, transformed not just the ecosystem of the Yellowstone National Park, this huge area of land, but also its physical geography.
I'm starting to cry. I need a moment.
Make it end. So bottom line. Oh yeah, we're gonna have the howling at the end.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm so sad.
This is where they all dance around in their little. Okay, make it stop.
Oh my God.
This is where they all dance around in their little wolfy hats.
God, you could take that bit by bit and just pick it apart. It's just such a load of crap. I don't know how anybody could even believe that.
Oh, are you kidding me? I got tons of emails when that first came out.
And look at how many views it's gotten. Of course, we added to that.
I know. Yeah, unfortunately,
that,
we've contributed.
Yeah.
So Rena, I'm sure you've seen that, heard it.
I have seen that. I get such a kick out of them because they love these fancy words like trophic.
Cascade.
Tropic
yeah.
Cascade.
That's thrilling. It's kind of related to river right there. You know?
Oh
well, the funny
God.
Part is, if you really were to carry their logic, okay, I'm going to use that term loosely, if we were going to carry that forward, the fact that they introduced wolves after they hadn't been there for 100 years made more water in the river, well, shoot, they haven't had hunting there for 100 years. So if we bring in a bunch of hunters, are they going to have more water too? They haven't had dinosaurs. What if we bring in dinosaurs? That would
change
stupid.
It too. Well, the whole thing is just ridiculous. I mean, to say that they, you know, they ran the deer out so that well, where'd the deer go? Because they disappeared.
Yeah, into their stomach.
Yeah.
I have a study here that was published in 2009, done by Scott Creel out of the Montana State University. And his study showed that, this was 2009, so 6 years ago, the Yellowstone elk are literally starving to death in the winter due to the stress of, you know, being chased around by wolves.
See, that's a big factor that I don't think they... Yeah, the killing is all there, but they don't... for those people who haven't actually studied this issue, I'm in the process of adding all the previous shows we've done down at the bottom of the page, but for those folks who don't already know, wolves kill for sport. They're one of the only, if not the only animal that kills for sport, kills to eat, and they also kill to teach their young. Well, when they kill to teach their young, they don't necessarily eat the whole animal they've killed. And sport, obviously, you know, they just rip off a hind quarter or, you know, a lot of these animals live after they've been attacked by wolves. They can't reproduce or live for any length of time, but they suffer.
They suffer.
Gruesome.
Yeah. The thing about that video, trappers around here in Montana are telling us that the wolves are eating the beaver. And I saw a video the other day of a wolf attacking a beaver, and it was very hard to watch. But it showed how wolves like to play with their food. They're like a cat with a mouse.
Mm.
And so the wolf would tear at this beaver and flip him around, and then the beaver would scramble to get away. And when he finally got the beaver down to the point where it wasn't moving well anymore, he kind of backed up, you know, and wagged his tail and just waiting for the beaver to get a little momentum, and then he pounced again. And, you know, they clearly have fun with their food. And they kill by consumption. In other words, they eat their prey alive. And really, once the prey stops struggling, they kind of lose interest. But their belly's full, and they go off and find something else to kill.
Well, in your article, one of the headings is Living with Wolves, and you talk about some of the outfitters and some of the locals that have actually gone into these killing fields where the wolves have gone through. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, just countless stories of, you know, snowmobilers coming upon dozens of dead animals on the snowmobile trails, running into moose that have had their nose shredded, or they're, you know, they're blind and they're just still alive, but they're obviously distraught. And the one that I mentioned in the article was a story about a guy that had gone down to a feeding station where they feed the elk in the winter down in Wyoming and I think in parts of Idaho. And he went by snowmobile in there, and he said there were 20 or 30 dead or dying elk lying around, some of them with their hindquarters eaten out, some of them with their noses and mouths shredded. And, you know, the poor guy said he threw up and went home, and he said he hasn't slept well since.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And what's sad, I mean, I guess the reason we're kind of bringing this up is they're doing it again. They're introducing these animals again. In California.
Yeah, they're still, I mean, they're like on a march,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and once they start to populate, these stories are going to reoccur in our mm-hmm. area. And we are kind of right now a little bit defenseless to stop it. I mean, if they couldn't stop it back there in one of our biggest national parks, what chance do we have of really nipping this in the bud right now? I mean, what do we do?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, there is not a wolf problem in eastern Montana. Montana is a big state, and over east there's a lot more big cattle ranches, sheep, and that sort of thing. And when I started doing video stories, I really wanted to interview a rancher, and I found it very difficult to get any of them to agree to come on camera. And I was in South Central Montana, and I'm asking around, and somebody said, well, go talk to thus and such a guy at thus and such a place. I won't mention his name or place. But so I went and looked the guy up, and he said, we don't have a wolf problem here, and we don't talk about it.
Mm.
So, if you went into eastern Montana, maybe a lot of them are wearing out now, but the bumper sticker said, shoot, shovel, and shut up.
Yeah, and you know, our local game people have heard that and have really put the scare tactics on our local folks about doing anything to disturb this burgeoning population of wolves. So with that, I think we need to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about the local populations.
Exactly. And the video, the audio that you heard a little bit ago, I've attached that video. And I also just attached the Wolves Kill the Bridal Party. I put that article on there as well. I blew it up into giant font so you can read it. We'll be right back. We're speaking with Rena Weatherholt. We're discussing wolves and their impact on our wallets, our landscape, our meat producers, and our politics.
My blood pressure.
And Bill's blood pressure. Be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf, the big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Tra la 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 la. Long ago there were three pigs, little handsome pigs. For the big bad, very big, very bad wolf, they did not give three figs. And number one was very gay, and he built his house.
Oops, that went wrong.
Well, this is an old song. Well, maybe it's a new song. It's a new Common Core three pig song.
Yeah, there we go.
Jigs, and so he built his house with twigs.
Backpedal.
And danced with lady pigs. Number three said, nix on tricks. I shall build my house with bricks. He had no chance to sing or dance, cause work and play don't mix. Ha, 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 the two little pigs just winked and laughed. Ha, who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, I am too. Because I'm actually not stupid.
Okay, here's the part that'll blow you away.
Oh.
That was actually on Barbara Streisand's debut album back in 1963.
Stop it.
Okay. Not making that up.
She sang Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf?
A very young Barbara Streisand, yes.
Huh.
Well,
and she had a career after that.
Yeah, she made it.
It's a miracle. Oh, my gosh. Well, there's a reason we have all these stories about big bad wolves and, you know, they're hiding in the woods and all that. There's an absolute reason for that. And we're going to come back to those stories, I'm assuming, once they take over. Because, you know, you see things we've attached. I attached the movies to the little videos down on the bottom. I think it was, Rena, do you remember the name? Was it Cry Wolf? What was the one that showed the kid cages?
Cry Wolf. J.D. King, that's an awesome video.
I attached Cry Wolf and also, Wolves in Government Clothing, David Spade's film. I think that was the one that had the kid cages where the kids have to wait for the school bus.
Yeah, that's in New Mexico or someplace,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's in the United States.
Yeah.
Where they've brought in all these Mexican wolves. Is there anything we need to cover still in who's part of this big, I'm not going to call it a conspiracy because it's already been done, so who else is a player in this that people might not know?
Well, Agenda 21, which is a book that was written by Maurice Strong, who was a former UN director, I think, a Canadian guy, and he's the late Maurice Strong now.
Yeah, good deal.
But, the United Nations has this lovely plan that's been around for a long time that the United States never signed on to as a treaty, but they did implement it through the executive branch of the federal government. So a lot of these sustainability programs and some of the even stuff that are coming out of your cities and counties are actually part of a a UN agenda. One of the things they would love to do, just love, 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 is to move people out of the Rocky Mountain Corridor and a plan called Yukon to Yucatan. And they just envision this wildlife corridor where humans don't dwell and where the wildlife, the buffalo can roam and the wolves, and it would be a really awesome thing.
Yeah.
It's not really something that the local people that live and work here are signed on to, but make no mistake, your federal government is implementing these goals and agendas through the executive branch. And that, if you contact Rosa,
Rosa Corey, yeah.
Yeah, she has done a great job of kind of documenting how they have implemented Agenda 21.
And that was interesting part of your article, too, because you linked to her her site, Democrats Against UN Agenda 21. And,
right.
You know, it's funny, when she came on our show a long time ago, I don't even know when, but years ago, it was long before she was a kind of a household name. Kind of funny. We've known her for a long time. I'll link those programs. We've had her on a couple times. You've got her and Scott Rockholm. We have some interview with him. And I was looking in your article, but I can't find it. You had a whole thing on the funding, how they had cut the funding and then finagled a way to bring it back during the Clinton administration.
Right. That was an interesting story, and I found that on Defenders Web Wildlife's webpage, that there was a government shutdown in 1996. So only essential services were funded, and Newt Gingrich and the Republicans had led a battle to not to lift the debt ceiling, and they had specifically cut the budget for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to not include funding for bringing in more wolves. They'd already brought wolves in 1995. They wanted to go get more. So according to the Defenders, Defenders of Wildlife, and they say two other private organizations loaned them the money to go up to Canada and get these wolves. I guess the $40 to $60 million from the Pittman Robertson Fund had already been spent by that time. So, you know, they actually just went around the will of Congress and paid for the trips to bring these wolves in and broke import laws. I mean,
yeah, this were private organizations that turned around and funded a program the government didn't want to fund, and they did it anyway.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
That's right. And the reason I mentioned Rosa from Democrats Against Agenda 21, she comes right out and says Ted Turner is helping to release large carnivores around to help clear out the hunters and the local people off of the private lands for their little hobby clearing the western lands of people.
Well, whether that's true or not, it happened.
It's happening.
Yeah, it works.
You know, so you don't believe us. Just look
don't
around.
Don't believe us. Just look, because they have cleared out because there's nothing left. It's really a sad situation.
So the Defenders of Wildlife, are they, and what about Center for Biological Diversity? I dealt with them a lot in the wolf hearings here in California. Do you guys hear a lot from them up there?
Well, let's see. I have an article here that was written by, we mentioned Karen Bud Fallon earlier. She did her own little investigation on the amounts of money that some of these groups are being paid. And one of them that she mentioned is Center for Biological Diversity. Between 2000 and 2009, filed at least 409 lawsuits in federal district courts and at least 165 appeals in federal appellate courts. And she goes on to document, you know, there's In the last 15 years, the Wilderness Society has filed 149 federal lawsuits, National Wildlife Federation, 427. She goes on and on. Forest Guardians, 180.
And they get paid to file these, don't they?
They do. In fiscal year 2003, the government paid 10,595 individual payments from the judgment fund to federal court plaintiffs for a price tag of $1,081,000,000.
Jeez.
And it goes on and on like that year after year after
and,
year.
And you wonder why we don't have any money and why the government is having to print money like crazy when they give it away to organizations like this to basically sue the government. I mean, basically bite the hand that feeds them. But that's okay.
And they get paid. Well, they get paid either way. That's a really big point to make is if they sue because you didn't introduce enough wolves or you tried to, oh my gosh, what happens when you try to create a hunting season and take them off the listed? See, because I've forgotten to cover that part because people think, well, it's okay to list them. And then when you get the right number back again, they'll take them off the listing.
Right. Well, that was the grand plan. And there were supposed to be 300 wolves. That was their little environmental impact statement. But then every time they'd, go to do lists, then they'd get sued. And I looked into, you really have to go into this database and search for this information. But once I figured it out, I went into that database. And Earth Justice, because Earth needs a good lawyer, who, by the way, also holds consultative status to the United Nations, on one of those lawsuits, they asked the judge for $669,000 in attorney's fees.
Mm.
Now, I think the judge came back and said, ask for something more reasonable, so they reduced it somewhat. But that's the kind of fees that they were getting for attorney's fees, and then through the Equal Access to Justice Act. And then they were also getting such further and additional relief as the judge may deem just and proper. So they were literally being paid damages, and that's where some of these billion-dollar figures come from, that the American taxpayers are funding this cottage industry.
Well, it sounds like one of the only ways we're really going to solve this problem is just to get rid of the Endangered Species Act, and I know that sounds rather...
Awesome.
Well...
Oh, no. Sorry.
Drastic, but that's true, isn't it? I mean, they just have totally abused that legislation and look what it's costing us now.
It's just a bureaucratic nightmare of a web. I mean, there is no way to stay in compliance with it. It literally needs to be repealed. But, I am excited about the transfer of federal lands in the western states. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with that movement or not.
Well, we should tell people about it because it's awesome.
There is a very credible movement gaining momentum now. When these western states, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, etc., came into the Union, there was a certain amount of land that the federal government held in trust until such time as they were going to dispose of it. The federal government were not allowed to own land except for specific purposes. So, as other states had joined the Union, the federal government had transferred these lands, but they never did it in the West. So here we have huge proportions of our Western lands in control of the federal government, which has turned out to be run by zealots that have they do not base their decisions on sound science. They base it on this emotional, in a way it's a kind of a hatred for private property rights and production, and it's just that weird leftist mentality. But led by the state of Utah, there is a really credible movement to turn these lands that the federal government has so badly mismanaged back to the states. So the states then would manage them, and I'm not saying it wouldn't be a fight, but at least it would be, you know, hand-to-hand combat where we could, you know.
Where we'd actually be in the fight without our arms tied behind our back?
Yeah,
I was, that's kind of what I was just thinking is if they turn these lands back over to the states for state control, what's going to stop these organizations from just going after the states that obviously have a much smaller budget? Of course, they wouldn't have the money to fight them, would they? If they
they wouldn't have the laws that they themselves with their handy Washington D.C. lobbying arms have written.
Right.
So, you know, they write the laws and regulations, and then they go about exploiting them. But they don't have that, you know, in state governments, yes, we have very strict environmental rules here, but there isn't that kit for them to grab a hold of and suckle for an income stream the way there is at the federal level.
Correct.
It's all about withdrawing that. All right, we're going to come back with Rena Weatherill in 5 seconds here. Is it 5 seconds, Bob? Is that this break is 5 seconds or 10?
Closer to 2 minutes.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back after we clap for the Wolfman.
We'll clap for the Wolfman.
Shim, shim, they wanna howl and shout. I'm out to get you, baby, there's no doubt. I saw you standing against the wall. Whoa. I whistled and I gave my all. Oh. Now don't tell me you don't fall for the wolf call.
I was like, where is this going? Bob, you're so obscure. Okay, what is that?
That is an obscure Elvis Presley track. Wolf Call.
God, we found Barbara Streisand and Elvis Presley to do wolf music. Yeah. That's a stretch, and we've done some of these shows before.
We're digging deep.
Coming up with new material. All right. So how about in the last, 20 minutes here, Rena, how about the end of your article? Bill's like, did you read the end? It's like, yeah, I read the end. He goes, holy cow. I don't want to blow the punchline, though. How do you see, what's like the perfect fix, I guess, for this problem?
Well, I think the perfect fix for, at least for that particular herd in that area, is to kill the wolves. I think you could put long-range shooters. I have friends that can shoot 700-800 yards just like every day. They could be posted along that migration path. And, of course, wolves hunt at night, so you'd probably have to outfit some guys with night vision equipment. But, nobody here wanted to have to go out and kill wolves. Nobody really enjoys that. Their dogs, they aren't edible. They aren't good for anything except you might use their pelt. They're covered with disease, and you can't really handle them safely without being in a hazmat situation.
Yeah, every time I see somebody who's killed, who posts a picture of a wolf kill and they're hugging it to show how tall it is, it's like, oh, you're blowing it. I hope you didn't breathe.
But they put us in this situation where our only reasonable alternative is to reduce the wolf population. And you can only do that by killing them. So that is the position they've put us in. And, you know, as far as the disease factor, there is no other way to, protect our populations from some of the diseases that they spread other than to eliminate them. And since they were put here illegally, and they're causing such terrible damage and destruction and, you know, spreading out, they're very invasive, it's really reasonable to think to just shoot on sight. So if you see a wolf, you just shoot it. That's the way we do with coyotes, and it keeps them wild. It keeps them from menacing in your neighborhoods at night. And, of course, it immediately protects the rest of the ungulates that we are trying to save now. There's no other way to do it other than to just kill wolves.
Well, I know in our area for quite a long time, to get a handle on the coyote population, they actually had bounties on coyotes. You kill mm-hmm. them and turn them in, and they actually paid you. I think that's really what it's going to take, isn't it, to just, totally eradicate and start over again.
Because they breed, contrary to popular belief, I can always hear the other side's heads exploding during our program. It's like, what? Kill them all? That's a tall order. It's tough to do because they're a lot wilier than I think people give them credit.
Oh, and they populate so quickly.
That too.
They have huge litters, and I think they have two litters a year or something, don't they?
Well, it depends on how much food they get. If they have lots of food, they absolutely have two litters a year, and of course, if food is scarce, then they reproduce less. But yeah, they have no problem reproducing at a high rate. And this country is so rugged. I know it is in California too, Oregon, Washington. There is no possibility that you could extirpate them, just as they had not been extirpated in the past. There's always going to be wolves here. But they absolutely should not be on private property. And if, in order to help the elk go back to the national forest where they used to live, you've got to get the predators out because they aren't going to go back there anymore.
Yeah, the idea that we've brought in an apex predator and allowed them to overproduce.
Right.
And destroy all the other game. I really liked your opening line in your segment that you titled Restoring the Rule of Law. It says, should a wave of reason sweep the land, the Endangered Species Act would be repealed. And at that part, I did like a little happy dance. And collective efforts to remove invasive weeds and animal species, manage predator populations, and treat or mitigate the spread of diseases. In other words, create a healthy environment that could be done locally by each state. And that's true. We do have weeds growing all over the place. You look at the I don't know about up where you are, but out here they have this mythical idea that cattle shouldn't be near any water, any of the rivers or anything. So mm-hmm. they've gone to all these great lengths to fence everything off. Well, when you do that, invasive weed species take over along all the riverbanks.
Right.
It's just stupid. The more you micromanage nature, the more screwed up it gets.
Well, the quickest way to destroy grassland, whether you're in Africa or in the United States, is to stop grazing it.
Oh, and, yeah, they've done lots of studies on that. And when you look at the difference between lands that are grazed regularly and lands that aren't, it's a stark difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah, do you have like at the on the ready, what are some advantages of grazing, especially of public land?
Well, a gentleman named Grant Gerber is out of Illinois, and Grant was a remarkable guy who actually died, I think, last year or the year before, on a cross-country horseback trip where, you know, they were protesting. It was kind of around the Bundy Ranch situation. And a group of cowboys from Nevada got together and rode coast to coast.
Oh, yeah, they rode to Washington, D.C. I remember that.
That's right. And Grant, who was just a fabulous guy, of course, threw him off, and he died of a broken neck, I think. Anyway, it was one of the saddest things. But one of the things that Grant did was created an organization called Smoked Bear, where they estimated that, I think they counted how many animals died in forest fires per acre, and then took that times the number of acreage that's burned in the West in the last 20 years since our forests were shut down by the Clinton administration. And the amount of deaths just from forest fire is just staggering. And one of the things that leads to forest fires is undergrazing. When you take the cattle out of the forest and don't graze, then it just gets overgrown into weeds and becomes a big fire hazard.
Yep. And we've done quite a few shows on fire and what causes, you know, what makes it easier, I guess, for our natural resources to burn up. I was looking for the website of his. It doesn't look like it's active anymore, smokedbear.com.
Oh, yeah, Smoked Bear. I do have a lovely video I'll forward to you. I managed to catch him on video during a visit to Montana, and, you know, he went through the whole thing. So I'll shoot that to you in an email, and you can put it up.
Okay, cool, because, yeah, everything else is literally recipes. That wasn't really what I was after. But if you do want to look up some recipes for Smoked Bear, I guess I could tell you in my little search here, I did find quite a few.
Yeah.
Okay, one last quick break, and then we'll come back with Rena and top off our hour. So we'll finish it off with whatever you want. You've got 2 minutes to think about that. You're joining We the People Radio here. WeThePeopleRadio.us is where you find all the information on previous programs, future programs, archives, and we'd love to hear from you.
There ain't no man gonna invade my territory. There ain't nobody out there gonna mess with me. Cause I'm big and hard and battle-scarred and getting long in the tooth. Desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. I've been chased, I've been bit. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. They like to shoot at me, but they miss. Things that got me cornered at last. Oh!
Oh, yeah.
Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me,
Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think little big girls should go walking in these spooky old woods alone.
my sheet suit on until I'm sure that you've been shown.
That's one of our favorites. I think that's been on all of our Wolf shows. It always comes back to that.
Oh, that's a must.
It is a must. So, Rena, what have we missed? Did we miss anything that people need to know?
Well, you know, I was going to offer some advice for Californians when it comes to dealing with wolves in your state. One of the things we talked about is the propaganda. And, you know, they put out outrageous things and really don't let them get away with telling untruths as though it was the truth. The other thing that they'll do is promise a fund. They're going to pay the ranchers for losses. And then the game they play is, oh, well, we can't really tell for sure that it was killed by a wolf.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then they only pay a minuscule amount, and the what they put ranchers through here to get compensation for a wolf or a grizzly kill is just outrageous. But, you know, so don't let them get away with saying that they're going to pay ranchers for their losses, because that doesn't work out.
Yeah, what's been the reality of that in your area?
Well, if you have an animal that you think was killed by a wolf, the first thing you have to do is call a federal agency called Wildlife Services. They're the agency that keeps coyotes and deer off of the airport runways and other ways controls animal damage. So you call Wildlife Services and they come out, and then the game begins as to whether you can prove that it was killed by a wolf. Even if wolves were feeding on it, doesn't mean that they actually killed it. So in those rare instances where they do confirm that it's a wolf kill, then you have to figure out the market value of that animal. And so you have to go back in your records and find similar animals that were sold, and I don't know what all kind of paperwork they require. But then you take that to the state capitol, where they now, since Defenders of Wildlife, that was their big promise, that they were going to compensate ranchers, but that didn't last too long. So now there is a state fund, so our taxpayers will help feed the wolves, but only,
great,
you know, after they jump through horrible amounts of bureaucratic hurdles. So, you know, that has put terrible hardship on the ranches that are in wolf-affected areas.
Well, the other thing, too, that I think people don't realize, they think, oh, well, they just put this species out there and they just, you know, breed and run around and, yeah, they eat some cows and it messes up some people's lives, but, you know, how big a deal could it be? Well, I don't have an exact count, but everywhere they do this, this creates an entire bureaucracy just around that species in that area.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You've got people who count them and follow them and collar them and track them and create the propaganda to tell us all it's no big deal. And they have all these little public meetings that are all fake, where everyone goes in and gives their, you know, their opinion, and then the conclusion's already made.
Right, good, and they just do it anyway. But it definitely is a high-dollar operation, and, you know, academia is not without it. You know, they should be held accountable also, because they will come out with ridiculous questions that need to be studied.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we don't have 100 years worth of wildlife study in this state. You know, we animals back forward. But academia also gets big grant money, and then they can fly around
and make up science. Which is awesome, because that's our favorite part. Rena, we're out of time. Can you believe it? Two hours of wolf chatting. Thank you very much. We hardly even knew you had a cold. We hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the great information, Rena. We really enjoyed it.
Well, you guys keep up the good work.
All right. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. You too.
All right, guys. We'll be back with you next week. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're looking for show ideas for 2016. Send them to us.